When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Talking Hockey Sense. My name is Chris Peters. It's episode 108 of the podcast, and glad to have you with us as we continue our conversation that we started last week about the 2024 NHL draft rankings. The rankings are now out at flowhockey.tv. You can read them there. If you go to flowhockey.tv, check out the tab all the way to your right on the NHL draft, and you'll have rankings, videos, so much more at that link. So make sure you check that out. And also, we're going to talk a little bit. We've got a Q&A today. We've got a lot of great questions, a lot of team-specific questions, NHL draft-related questions. So make sure you go check out the rankings. You can see what you agree with, what you disagree with, what you like, what you don't like. And you can always let me know on Twitter, because I'm a glutton for punishment, and there are bound to be disagreements because, hey, there it is, an inexact science, this whole draft and scouting thing. So always happy for your input as well. And plenty of you have already volunteered it, so I thank you for that. But anyway, before we get to today's topics, which will focus primarily on the NHL draft, did want to remind you, if you haven't yet, please subscribe to the podcast on your podcast app of choice. Make sure that you are signed up for all the great hockey that we have also on Flow Hockey as well, where you can watch this podcast in its entirety. You can also watch it on YouTube. But when you do subscribe to Flow Hockey, you get a ton of stuff, including a lot of the players that we're going to talk about today from the USHL, from the CJHL, BCHL, a lot of junior hockey players. But we've also got great college hockey and professional hockey. CCHA and Atlantic Hockey, their playoffs are starting up. The CHA, the Women's Hockey Conference, their playoffs are starting up as well. Automatic bids for the NCAA tournament on the line and all of those events. We've also got the ACHA National Tournament coming your way. And I came from Iowa State University, big time ACHA program there. That's where I got my start in the hockey business. So super pumped that we're going to have that on Flow Hockey. So make sure you are subscribed to get that, the ECHL, the USHL, the SPHL, so much more. It's a great time to subscribe to Flow Hockey. Lots of great action coming your way, and it's almost the postseason too. All right, now that we've got through that, I want to get back to the NHL draft. That's what we're going to focus primarily on. As I mentioned, the top 50 prospects for the 2024 NHL draft, as I see them at this point in the season, are on flowhockey.tv. So make sure you check that out, and you'll be able to follow along. And if you want, pull it up right now, and we'll talk about it, because we're going to talk about some of the rising prospects of the 2024 NHL draft. There are obviously some guys that are way up in the draft rankings. There are players that are in a position now that I didn't necessarily expect them to be in at the beginning of the season. But as we learn more about these players, I wanted to call out some of the guys. You know, we talked about the top 10 last week, so I'm not going to focus on that as much. If you want to hear full reports on each of my top 10 players, go back to last week's episode. But we're going to talk about some of the guys that fell outside of the top 10 but are trending up. And I'm going to start that today with a conversation about Tej Egingla. And of course, you know, Kelowna Rockets, the son of Jerome Egingla, you know, certainly that gets you that credibility, that instant credibility when you're the son of an NHL legend. People are automatically rooting for you. But I think for me in particular, and I think for a lot of people, you want to make sure that you take that little pause and you don't, you know, don't kind of get too high or too low on a player based on the name recognition. What I have to say about Tej Egingla is that he is absolutely rising to the occasion. He's exceeding expectations, and he continues getting better. And that's the most important thing. The reason that Tej Egingla is a rising prospect for me, and he comes in at number 16 on the rankings, which might seem a little bit low. I think he's trending up, you know, even in NHL boards, you're going to see him a little bit higher. But I think 16, I think mid first round is really the range that he's going to go in. He's still growing into his body, still can get a little bit bigger, you know, kind of comes in 6 foot, a little under 190 pounds. I mean, that's a good frame to grow into, and I think he's going to be a solid player. But what I really like is he's got great deception, really good hands. He's got quickness with the hands. I think the feet are coming along nicely. I still think that if he can add a gear to his skating, it's going to make a big difference in his game and in his effectiveness as a potential top six scorer. But I think the goal scoring sense that he's shown this year, the ability to get pucks to the middle of the ice, the compete level, all of that looks great. And then on top of that, I always think when you do have a player that is the son of a professional, a former professional, especially one that was a captain of an organization, a guy who was in the media spotlight, a guy who was on the cover of video games. I mean, we're talking about one of the elite talents of his generation in Jerome Iginla. There's so much that can be absorbed by the player from just a professionalism standpoint, how they carry themselves, how they deal with the media, all these other things that other players might not have as much of a focus on at a younger age. This is something that Tij at least experienced for a portion of his childhood, being able to, you know, his dad's career still extended into, so he was conscious for that. And so many NHL players have kids after their careers, and their kids don't necessarily get a chance to see them play. Tij Iginla is the guy that he's seen a lot of it. And so I think that's really impressive, you know, that kind of thing can happen. And we've seen it with so many players over the years that have done some really cool things. So that's one of the guys that, you know, I wanted to focus on. And I think if he continues producing at the rate that he is right now, I mean, there is a chance that he is going to go higher than that middle of the first round. But I think 16 right in the middle there, I think that's a good range for him. I think that's a range where teams are certainly going to be, you know, more excited about him as a prospect, just given the talent of forwards up front and also the high-level defensemen. I think there's going to be a real run on defensemen in the top 10, top 15. So that's why Tij kind of falls just outside of that. But I have a lot of time for that player, and it goes far beyond, you know, who his dad is. I think that he has earned everything he's gotten this year, and I'm very impressed with his play thus far. Another guy moving up, we talked about him, touched on him a little bit last week because we talked about some of the USHL players, and this is a big year for the USHL. And one of the guys that really has risen up my personal board after a lot of uncertainty at the beginning of the season is Michael Hage. And, you know, I mentioned he had a really tough fall classic, and that kind of got him off on the wrong foot. But really, since then, he's been outstanding. And I've seen a lot of games from him where he just impacts the game in a number of ways. And I think he's got a great skating ability. He's scoring goals more frequently. He's scoring big goals. You know, Chicago really struggled at the beginning of the season. They've improved their game over the last little bit. And so I think Michael Hage is a big part of that. And I have a lot of time for the player, for the, you know, what he's been through as well, you know, losing his father tragically this summer in a swimming accident. You know, what kind of, you know, impact does that have on your mentality, your priorities and different things like that? I mean, you can only imagine. You know, family should be a higher priority for him right now and different things, but it's also this critical moment in your life, and you've got to kind of deal with this great personal tragedy and heaviness. And the fact that he's not only been able to play through it, but to embrace, you know, hockey in the way that he has, at least the way that, you know, he told our Ryan Sykes. There's a great feature story on flowhockey.tv from Ryan Sykes on our USHL page, where, you know, he goes in and says how much more he appreciates going to the rink because it is an escape from what's been a very heavy year for him. And so, you know, you wonder how much that's going to play a role and how much that impacted his early game. But, you know, he also was injured for a long time last season and missed most of last year and kind of had to start from behind. And when you're a 16-year-old going into the USHL, it's hard enough, but he was coming in at the most critical time of the season for a team that was, you know, in the playoffs and battling for position. And, you know, even when Macklin Celebrini was out of the lineup for a little bit for the World Under-18s last year, and that they needed, you know, that boost. And so we'll see what Michael Hage ultimately does and where he goes. I think that he's probably a late first round pick still. I think it's possible, you know, on our rankings, he was 23rd. So, you know, that's another thing where he certainly could rise up. But I thought at the beginning of his season, you know, he was settling into that kind of good second round pick kind of player, you know, the kind of guy that you think probably middle six. You know, I think there's an outside chance that he's a top six scoring threat. And that's where you see those guys go later in the first round. And so that's where I think he'll ultimately end up. Another guy who just snuck into my first round is Tarek Parasak, who's been really lighting up the WHL this season. And one of the things that I find so fascinating about this particular player, plays for the Prince George Cougars, came in at number 32 on our list, is last season he didn't play in the WHL beyond one playoff game. That's his WHL experience coming into the season. He spent most of last year at the Edge Prep School out west in the Canadian Scholastic League, another, you know, place where you can see a lot of great young prospects before their junior careers start, and you can see them on Flow Hockey as well. But Parasak came in, he's got 78 points in 55 games as a WHL rookie, essentially, as an under-18 player. And so he's a May birth date, so he's a little bit later, you know, like mid-summer, those May, June, July guys, those kind of later players, you don't always see them necessarily emerge. And I feel like we've seen a bit of a late bloomer here, but 31 goals and 78 points for Prince George. And to the fact that this is his first full year of junior hockey is really what impresses me most about him. I think that he's good by the net. He's a clever player. He makes a lot, you know, puts himself in good positions, good release, you know, has shown that goal scoring tendency. He's a pass shot threat, which I really like as well. The fact that, you know, he is deceptive in that he can use that threat of the shot to make a good play, find the open teammate. But, you know, that's a player that I didn't necessarily, you know, have on my radar fully coming into the season. Did not play in the Olenka Gretzky Cup, you know, wasn't really on that radar either. And now here he is with this just incredible season that he's had. And just, you know, certainly a guy that I'm going to be keeping closer tabs on. But as I watch more video of Parasak this season, it just became evident, like, this is a guy that has some higher end offensive capabilities, and he's on a significantly upward trajectory. And so I think that the pace of his growth is really what fascinates me the most, because, you know, to go from where he was last season to a dominant player in the WHL this season is truly impressive. And so he's a guy that I think is certainly worth mentioning, and was not really, you know, in my summer kind of preparation, was not a guy I expected to be talking about as a first round candidate, and I might even be a little bit lower on him as a result. But I think that this is a player that we'll continue to watch throughout this next portion of the season and see where he ultimately ends up. The last guy I wanted to focus on among draft risers is Dean Letourneau. And we had a question. We've talked about him a little bit sparingly, but Dean Letourneau is a guy that is getting viewed a lot, and he's still not, for me, I'm not comfortable putting him in the first round range, but I had him at 42 on my list. He is a player that I think is going to be pretty fascinating to see where he ultimately goes, because I do think there are teams that are going to take that leap in the first round. 6'7" forward, over 200 pounds. You know, he's played some with the Sioux Falls Stampede this year in the USHL, but with St. Andrews College, which is where he is now, 110 points for him in all games and in the prep hockey conference, where they play teams like Shattuck and Mount St. Mary's and Kent, the Kent Selects, South Kent Selects. He has 25 points in 14 games, 14 goals, so a goal per game in that conference. And this is, he's kind of a bit of a mystery in terms of, you know, when he, at the level that he's playing at his size, physically dominant, really good at the net front, quick hands, you know, not an amazing skater. Does he think it fast enough at his size? You know, those are the questions that are a little bit tougher to answer. You know, he did play those two USHL games, and I haven't reviewed the tape of those yet, but talking to some scouts, I thought he was a little behind the pace, didn't really. And that is a big jump going from prep school to the USHL. I think it's it's an underrated leap for a lot of players, because the pace is faster, the players are stronger, everything kind of moves quicker. And if you're not adjusted to that pace pretty quickly and you're not processing quickly enough, you're not going to look real good in the USHL. So he's a Boston College commit. As of right now, I believe he's not slated to go there until 2025-26. So if you draft this player, you're expecting him to play a year of junior more than likely. I think that's probably the best, based on what I've seen so far, that is the best path. We've seen that path before for late first round draft picks. Sam Renzel, drafted out of Minnesota High School, played that hybrid USHL Minnesota High School season. Chicago Blackhawks draft him. He plays a full season in the USHL. Now he's having a strong freshman season at the University of Minnesota. This is a player that you draft, you're patient with. And that's why I think that there are teams that, if especially teams that have multiple picks, there's a chance he's going to be a first-round draft prospect. For me, 42, but for other teams, he could be a bit higher. Fascinating player. Really looking forward to tracking him further this season and also seeing what else we get out of him over the course of the year, under 18 World Championship, different things like that. You know, does he make that team? There's a lot of things that could potentially happen for him. All right, moving on to the players that are slipping in the rankings. And I didn't have a ton of guys that I felt super strongly about. We talked a little bit about Cole Yzerman, you know, kind of came into the season as the presumptive number two prospect. He's fallen on NHL boards. He's fallen on public boards. And on our board, he was number eight. But, you know, we talked about that last week. So let's talk about some of the other guys. And one of the guys that I think, you know, he is slipping, it's completely because of injury. So really through no fault of his own, but it's Aaron Kiviharju. And Aaron Kiviharju right now, you know, he came in on my list towards the end of the first round. And really it was kind of that feeling that I had where it's like, gosh, you know, I don't necessarily, you know, I can't drop him out of the first round, but there is a good chance, I would say, that he slips out of the first, or maybe not a good chance, but it's certainly more of a possibility now. But Kiviharju, you know, broken kneecap, has been out for an extended period. He's expected back this spring. I think that means that we'll see him at the under 18 World Championship. I hope that means we'll see him there. I think Finland could have a very strong team if he's in the lineup, if they have Hellenius, if they have some of their other players that weren't available to them at the most recent under 18 Five Nations tournament. But Kiviharju is slipping because of that injury. And also I think because, you know, he's an undersized defenseman that, you know, those guys need to prove themselves repeatedly. I think that that's the other thing is, you know, sub 6 foot defensemen, sub 5'11 defensemen need that. They constantly have to prove themselves that they can handle themselves. And now, you know, those that have seen Kiviharju, they see the body of work. They know, they have an understanding. I'm sure there are going to be a number of Finnish scouts that are going to vouch for the player. And the reason I didn't drop him out of the first round is because I think that he has elite level hockey sense. And that is really the critical piece here. Number 24 on the board. I think there are a lot of teams that would take a defenseman like him in that late first round range because of that hockey sense. They'll understand the risk. They'll understand. And really, the injury to me isn't as big of a deal as the lost development time, which, you know, so that's really, it's not because we haven't seen him. It's because, hey, this is a player that was progressing a certain way, and now we haven't been able to see that progression and see where that goes. If he has, you know, a great season in Liga this year, if he's playing, you know, a big role, you know, that helps his cause immensely. You know, I think you think about guys like Axel Sandin Pelikka, who went kind of in that mid first round range last year, early mid first round. That's a slot where you could see Kiviharju get in there. But there are other players. You've got Zeev Bouyum. You've got Zane Parekh. You've got guys that are playing and playing at an extremely high level, and teams are going to feel safer about those guys. That's just a fact. They're going to feel safer to draft those players over an Aaron Kiviharju because they've seen it all year long. Now, if Kiviharju comes back, has a big under 18 World Championship, that might move him right into that conversation with those guys because I think that hockey sense is so immense. But it really is going to be a question of how comfortable teams are, how much he's able to play, and how much they're concerned about, you know, the lost development time, his NHL timeline, and you know, basically how much risk you're willing to take on from a player that, you know, is kind of tricky when you haven't been able to watch him and see what happens. Same story for the next player, although he didn't drop as far on my list because I still feel, but I do feel like this is going to be a trend, is that Adam Juracek, you know, he is the next guy that I think is, you know, kind of falling a little bit in the eyes just because of the injuries. He's dealt with multiple injuries this year. You know, I thought he could be a top 10 pick coming into the season. He's slipped in that. You know, he's 15 for me, which isn't really low, obviously. But I do think that he is a guy that's, you know, trending backwards just because now we're not going to see him for the rest of the year. Now he's not going to have opportunities to prove himself. He's not playing in these international events that would have given him a leg up and a chance to prove himself further. You know, when he comes back next year, is he going straight back to the Czech Republic playing in the Czech League? Is he going to be up to speed? Injured players. The good thing is I think a lot of people have a really strong book on Adam Juracek and have a good sense of who he is. But at the same time, it's similar. You know, basically this year he's played 20 plus games, which is not bad. But it's also most of those games were in the Czech Pro League, and it's really hard for younger players to stand out and show off all the different traits in their game. He got hurt immediately at the World Juniors. And so, you know, this has been unfortunate, but it kind of runs in the family because David Juracek also had a significant knee injury when he was in his own draft season. So there's a lot there that I think needs to be figured out. But Adam Juracek falling only slightly. We'll see exactly how far that goes. But again, this is a year where you've got such strong defensemen in this draft that you have to really stand out. And that brings me to our final guy. And really coming into the season, I thought, you know, Henry Muse might be a mid first round guy, potentially even higher than that. Really liked his offensive game, the smoothness that he plays with. I still think he's going to go reasonably high in the draft in terms of, you know, it could be a first rounder. But as we kind of got to the decision-making, for me, he's 31st on my board. This is a guy that I thought would be in the mid-first round. Some of the things, it's just I think the defensive game has not come along in a way that makes me comfortable about his overall projection. I think that if you're going to be a top four defenseman, you have to be super elite offensively if your defense is going to struggle. And I think that he's good, very good offensively. I think so good that I believe Ottawa even trotted him out at forward, which is not a great sign when they are when you're supposed to be a defenseman. But he's near a point per game in the OHL. He's you know, produced in pretty much every level he's been at. He was had a great Hlinka Gretzky Cup in terms of his production there. But, you know, I think as a right shot defenseman, 6 foot defenseman, kind of on the borderline of you know, where teams are, you know, kind of looking at those players and saying, you know, what is it that he's going to be at the NHL level? You know, I think that's the thing that gives me pause, is that I'm not 100% certain, you know, is he a top four offensive guy or is he a 5-6 power play specialist? You know, like that's where it comes. And if he's a 5-6 power play specialist, that's not a first round draft pick. So he's right in there at 31 for me, but still, this is a player that has plenty more to prove. I like what he's done. I think he's an intelligent player. I think we need to see a little bit more rounding out of the defensive game for teams to feel comfortable selecting him, because I think, you know, he doesn't necessarily have that elite offensive trait of like a Zane Parekh or even a Zeev Bouyam in terms of his overall puck skills. And you see other guys like Carter Yakimchuk and other that are just accelerating and also have size on their side. So that's the other thing that kind of comes into play. And when you judge Muse versus this D, all the D in this draft, you start seeing, okay, well, he's not stacking up in X ways, and it's getting harder to see where he fits in an NHL system. So, but that'll be interesting to watch. I'm very excited to see where he goes, because I think that he's a good player. I mean, obviously, I still have him in the first round. I think there's a lot there. I think that a team could work with him on a lot of things, that there's plenty of development ahead for him. But still a lot to be figured out with Henry Muse. So that's a bit on the risers and the fallers. And now we're going to move into one of my always favorite. We haven't done it in a few weeks because there's been so many other things to get to, but I love getting our listeners involved. And that is where we go next. It's our time for our listener Q&A. And now I turn the show over to you. You ask me the questions, typically on Twitter. I answer them here on the podcast. So hopefully if you tweeted me a question, you are listening, because that is the only way you're going to get the answer. We're going to start things off quick, and we're going to start it hot at the very top of the draft, as this one comes from Patrick. And Patrick asks, where do you see Celebrini in terms of comparison to recent NHL players? Will he be the second best top pick to enter the draft since Matthews, with only Bedard being better? Can you see a scenario where he isn't in the NHL next year? So a couple of questions in there, and I'm really glad you asked those, Patrick, because I think that they are both interesting. First off, I think I said it last week. You know, I think that Macklin Celebrini to me would be on a level of Jack Hughes. If we're talking since Austin Matthews, I think Jack Hughes is a draft prospect, his draft season. Sometimes we forget how good he was in his draft season, how dominant he was. He set the single season points record for the National Team Development Program. You think about guys like Patrick Kane, Phil Kessel, Austin Matthews himself, you know, coming through and being, you know, dwarfed in terms of total points by Jack Hughes. You know, so I think Celebrini is at that level. So it would be Bedard, Hughes, Celebrini, kind of what, you know, it would be 2A, 2B kind of situation between those two. The thing that separates Celebrini a bit from Jack is Jack was just, you know, incredibly offensive, still incredibly skilled, really like what he brings to the table. But Celebrini has this complete game. I don't think he's as dynamic or as good a skater as Jack Hughes, but he is a good, he's good in both those regards. He is undeniably, to me, a better goal scorer in terms of the power of his shot, the placement of his shot, the varieties of ways that he can score. The toughness and compete level, I think, are there as well. So he is really in that discussion for me, which puts him in a high echelon. And I've said it before, I feel like we're not fully appreciating how good Celebrini is because Bedard was last season. And to me, Celebrini is an elite talent that is going to change a franchise when he gets there. And we're starting to see, you know, Jack Hughes over the last couple of years, we've seen him, and New Jersey needs a lot more pieces, but they are better for having a centerpiece. They need a centerpiece. Chicago is a long ways away, but they have a centerpiece. Macklin Celebrini, to me, can be the centerpiece of a rebuild, and that's why I think he's such a special prospect, among many other reasons. All right, so we've got a lot of Blackhawks fans have flooded the mentions, and they have asked questions. And so I've got a twofer here, and this is we've got basically the same question. And first, it's Nate Hawk. Who can you see the Blackhawks drafting at second and third overall? Michael also asked us, if you were the Hawks and get number two, would you go for Lindstrom or Levshinov? So since the and I actually had this asked to me like four different ways. So those of you that also asked this question, sorry, I'm not getting to it. But on my list, Artem Levshinov is number two. And so if I were going completely off my own board at number two, with the knowledge that Macklin Celebrini is number one, Levshinov would be my pick. I think that with what the Blackhawks have, with Kevin Korchinski on the back end, they have guys like Alex Vlasic. They have, you know, Sam Renzel waiting in the wings, and we'll wait and see where he's at. They have Ethan Del Mastro. They have a number of really good defense prospects that are interesting. I think you can get really, you start stacking your blue line with talent, and Levshinov, to me, is the guy that, you know, really stacks your blue line with talent. You look at what he's done this season, and he had a bit of a quieter weekend against Michigan, but Michigan State still wins. He had a quieter weekend on the points front. Michigan State still wins. But Levshinov, to me, is a guy that if you have Korchinski and Levshinov, you've got two guys that are legit, you know, 1A, 1B kind of players. Levshinov with the right shot, the size, the strength. You know, I think that he defends fine. I think that there are a lot of things that he does with the puck well. You know, you want that mobility on your blue line, but you can have mobility and size and, you know, strength on your blue line. That, to me, is where I would look. I think that they can be the biggest difference makers. That said, you look at what Caden Lindstrom has done, and he came in, you know, on my list at number three, or no, number four, rather. And that's where, you know, I definitely see sorry, I'm forgetting my list. He did come in at number three. That's, I think you're splitting hairs. And so if you're the Chicago Blackhawks and you're looking at those two players and you're saying, do I want the guy that I think could be a top pairing defenseman or number one set or a number two center? I still think that top pairing defenseman holds more weight for me. If I think that I can have the 1-2 punch of Bedard and Lindstrom long term, and I think that, you know, especially since you're not getting Celebrini, and who knows, the Blackhawks could get Celebrini. I know nobody thinks that it could happen again, right? But we've seen it happen before. I think, you know, Lindstrom makes a lot of sense for them. So I think that really you can't go wrong in that range. The one guy I think that they won't go for is Siliev, who is really intriguing, but I think there's so much risk there. And the Blackhawks are at a stage in their development as an organization where I don't think you can take on that level of risk. Same thing with Demidov, although he'd be a really interesting scorer to pair up with Bedard. But I just don't see those as fits as much. But to me, Levshinov makes a lot of sense and a guy that I could see there. So that's what I've got. I've got Levshinov to answer your questions, but I think that we're really splitting hairs on that decision, and it's kind of a win-win. And you hope that you're in it at worst the number two pick. If you're number three, the decision is going to get made for you. I think one of Lindstrom or Levshinov will be there, and then you have that kind of opportunity to make those picks. Very similar question, and this one comes from Maxwell, and he asks, what 2024 right-hand defenseman would be the best fit for Kevin Korchinski's game? Emery jumps out at me, but Ellick, Danford, Kleber are certainly on a short list. We know this regime values size and mobility on the back end, maybe Bedinka. So there's a lot of different names in there, and you know, I think that the hard part is when you're talking about where the Blackhawks are going to be picking. You know, I don't think that you're necessarily looking for Kevin Korchinski's battery mate there, the guy that's going to be there. And all the players that Maxwell mentions are those more defensive-minded players, right? So those right-hand defensive-minded guys, while they're going to be nice to have, I still think that you want – you can get the size and you can get the mobility with a Levshinov. And maybe they're not on the same pairing, but if they're one and two – and you're basically in a position where one of those guys is on the ice almost all the time. I mean, I think Kevin Korchinski has a huge ceiling, but I also think Artem Levshinov has a huge ceiling. And I think that those, you know, you're looking less for the pairing and you're looking more for the total package of what your blue line can look like. I think Kevin Korchinski can kind of play with anybody and he's going to be fine. I think Levshinov can play with anybody and he's fine. So, you know, I think having those more defensive minded guys certainly helps. And being able to pair a guy that wants to run a little bit and roam a little bit helps. But I don't think that that's something you're necessarily thinking about at the draft. I think you're thinking about that as you're building your roster, as you're developing players, and you say, well, you know, what do we have with Alex Vlasic? What do we have with Ethan Delmastro? You know, these different players that are already in the system, Nolan Allen, you know, all these guys that are there, and you're trying to make a decision that way. But I think if you can have a top four that includes one of or both, you know, that includes both of Levshinov and Korchinski, that's where you can make your most sizable impact. All right, moving on. We are going to Rizzy NHL, another Blackhawks fan here. How far do you see Cole Iserman dropping on draft day? Also, projections for Nick Lardis. So we'll get to the first one. You know, I think for me, Cole Iserman, I can't see him getting outside of the top 10, but it's not out of the question. I think that there are certainly teams that are a little less convinced about, you know, the goal scoring talent ultimately being strong enough to translate enough to be a top 10 pick, where it's like, is he going to score 50 a year or 40 a year or, you know, even 35 a year? That's still a big, you know, big number. And if you feel that they are, then by all means, go for it. You know, like that's a player that you could easily take in the top 10 and have an impactful player. But I do think that there are teams that are less convinced that that's enough. And it's really on Iserman to prove that there's more to his game. I think there is more to his game, but I think there are teams that feel a little concerned about, you know, the overall hockey sense, the lack of driving play, the, you know, is he just a scorer? And, you know, we've had that argument before about a lot of players, but like, you know, like Cole Caufield, is he just a scorer? Well, he also had elite hockey sense and feel for the offensive zone and ability to create space. You know, we've had questions about different players that had the goal scoring as their primary talent, but it still matters a lot. And I think that's to me is where, you know, there's got to be some weight put on what Yzerman does. And to me, I still think that's top 10 worthy. But I know that I'm not necessarily in the, like, I don't know if I'm in the majority on that one. I think there's a lot of varying opinions on the player. As far as Nick Lardis goes, to get to your question, Nick Lardis was a third round pick of the Chicago Blackhawks in 2023, having a great season, you know, 50 points in 37 games, 29 goals. You know, I think that he's been a goal scorer. He's proven that time and time again. He's certainly been a guy that has made an impact. And I, you know, for me, I think he's a bottom six kind of, you know, scoring depth option. I like his game for that role. I think that was a good pick in the third round. I think there's good value in that player. But, you know, I do think that it's more likely than not that he's going to be down your lineup and creating scoring depth as opposed to being a top of the lineup player. All right, we move on to our next question. This one comes from Blue Chip Prospect, and they ask, "Hi, Chris, hope you're having a great day." Pretty good so far. "I'm a big fan of Berkeley Catton. I made a scouting report of him on YouTube and basically love everything about him except for the frame. I'm interested to know what you think of him and what you see his potential is in the NHL. Thanks." You're welcome. Let's answer it. So Berkeley Catton, you know, obviously a player that I think has incredible potential. I think the offensive game is outstanding. The skating is outstanding. The compete level is outstanding. I just think he does a little bit of everything well. And as you mentioned, it's the frame. Really, I think that's what keeps him out of the top five, just because there's so many elite level defensemen that have size, that have the offensive capability. I think it nudges him down the list. And we talked about him last week, so I don't want to spend a ton of time on Catton. But, you know, I just think that he plays with the pace, with the intelligence, with the compete, with the skill that allows him to be a potential top six scorer at the next level. You know, the question will be, is he a center at the NHL level? I think he is. I think he plays well enough in that role. You know, I think there's a lot of, you know, I was talking with Corey Promen about him on the Athletic Hockey Show podcast. And we talked, you know, there's a lot of rhymes with Logan Cooley, who anybody that listens to this podcast knows I have a lot of time for Logan Cooley and had him as the number one prospect in his draft. I think Catton would be higher in a lot of draft years. It's just the fact that we have so many big defensemen that are really in there. And then also, you know, such an elite winger in Ivan Demidov. You know, I think there's a good chance Catton goes before Demidov in the draft, just because of the Russian factor and other reasons. But Berkeley Catton is a heck of a player and a guy that I think we're going to be spending a lot more time on as the draft gets closer, because I think that he's going to push himself into that discussion. Just recently, he is now the third highest scoring 17-year-old in Spokane Chiefs history. And you know, that is pretty impressive. I just saw that stat shared by the Chiefs earlier today. And, you know, you think about the history of that organization, the two guys that he trails are Pat Falloon and Ray Whitney. So two guys that went very high. And, you know, obviously Ray Whitney had a fantastic NHL career, but Berkeley Catton, third highest scoring 17-year-old in Spokane Chiefs history. Very impressive. I just really like the player a lot, and I think he's going to be a great top 10 pick in this draft. All right, so Blackhawks fans keep flooding the inbox, and hey, if you do it, I'm here to answer. We got another one, and this one comes from Fio, and Fio asks, "Who do you think the Blackhawks select with their second first round pick from the Lightning? Who are your favorite players in that 20 range?" Well, if I would have done a tiny bit more prep on this question, I would have seen the standings basically. But I think obviously this pick is looking like it's going to be a little bit higher than maybe the Blackhawks thought when they first acquired this pick via trade. But in terms of players in the 20 and below range that I think are very interesting, you know, I'll be interested to see, you know, is Sacha Boisvert there from the Muskegon Lumberjacks? I had him 19 on my list. I think that there's, you know, that's another guy where if you go defenseman early, you can get a center, a guy with some size, a guy with, you know, a longer timeline. He's heading to the University of North Dakota, which has sent, you know, a few players of the Blackhawks, namely Jonathan Toews. I think that, you know, Boisvert is not necessarily Toews, but he's certainly a player that's going to, you know, make an impact at the collegiate level, develop and be ready to come back. Other guys like Liam Greentree, big size. Will he still be available there? The question is, you know, does he have the feet? Really can score. You know, I just think that having a guy like him, I think that if the Blackhawks are able to get bigger with this pick, bigger up front in particular, especially if they don't go with like a Lindstrom in the draft with that number two pick, can they get guys that give you a little bit of size? You know, that could help. Michael Hage is another one where he should be available in that range. Is that, you know, the guy you want in that category? I think he has the pace and, you know, he's obviously playing in their backyard right now with the Chicago Steel. Had him at 23 on the list. You know, there are plenty of other players, I think, that are in that range. Beckett Senecky, Nikita Artemanov. You know, I think that there are players that I you know, personally, I think that that forward would be the play there, considering that, you know, most of the best defensemen are going to be gone. But if you go with Lindstrom, then you start thinking about other defensemen, Kivi Harju, EJ Emery, Charlie Ellick, Cole Hudson. I mean, a lot of different players, but I think, you know, if they want to get bigger, if they want to have, you know, they've certainly gone with size on the blue line when they can. You know, I think that those are the types of players that you can certainly slot in from that range. All right. Well, next up, we've got a question from Avco Cup, and Avco Cup asks, I've heard that the Jets have some concerns about Rucker McGroarty's conditioning affecting his ability to transition immediately to the NHL, that his performance drops late in shifts and on the second game of the weekend. Is that something you've noticed? Is he NHL ready or not? Really interesting question. Obviously, really specific as well. We're moving on. Should have mentioned we're moving on from our draft questions now to drafted prospects. And so, you know, Rucker McGroarty, I think, is an interesting case. Now, we also have to, he was injured this season. I think it knocked his conditioning a little bit. And I think that this is actually true where, you know, you can see him fade a little bit more in games. The thing is that players like McGroarty who don't have tremendous skating ability, it becomes more noticeable because that when you combine fatigue with not being able to keep up with the pace, you know, on your best day, even though I think he thinks the game at a really high level, that can be something there. The question about NHL timeline is really interesting with McGroarty, because if you look at his production this year, he's obviously been exceptionally productive. He's been one of the top players in terms of points per game in the NCAA all season. But we've seen a lot, and this is actually true, I think, of a lot of Michigan players this year. They have not put many good weekends together. They've put together amazing games. They're one of the highest scoring teams in the country, but they allow goals like crazy. And I think we've seen drop off from them in a variety of games throughout this season where they just haven't necessarily played their best hockey. So that's an interesting dynamic there. You know, if I'm Rucker McGroarty, I'm taking a long, hard look at what I do next. I think that there is plenty that can be gained from him going to the AHL. I don't think he would be going straight to the NHL out of Michigan. I think there's plenty to be gained from him staying, being more dominant, more consistent, working on the conditioning, working on the strength, you know, having a healthy season. He really loves being at Michigan. And, you know, I think that that is certainly something that is a factor that I don't think we fully appreciate for some of these players, is that some of their delays of the NHL is just, you know, hey, I'm liking where I'm at. I'm still developing. Why rush it? You know, I've heard from a lot of different players. I remember hearing from many years ago, we had Kevin Shattenkirk as a speaker when I was working at the NTDP, and he talked about the importance of – you know, waiting and enjoying the experience of college and making sure that you take advantage of that. So if I'm Rucker McGroarty, I'm taking as much time as I need to make the decision. I'm not rushing into it. I'm sure that Winnipeg would like to sign him. They'd like to get him into the AHL quickly. But I'm not certain that that's 100% what will happen. I don't think there's any risk of him, you know, staying for 4 years and letting his draft rights lapse, which I know is a concern at times for teams. But I do think that Rucker McGroarty has more that he can get to, and we'll see where that goes from here. All right, moving on to our next question, and it's another drafted prospect question. And this is a good one from Trevor. It feels like Fedor Svechkov isn't talked about as much as a Preds prospect, but he's having a pretty good year in Milwaukee. What kind of NHLer does he project as? So, you know, Fedor Svechkov is a, you know, first round draft pick. And I think, you know, we have a player here that has entered North America. It's his first season in North America. And he has had a really good season with Milwaukee. Milwaukee's been awesome this year, by the way, in the AHL. Really strong season. Went on a franchise record long winning streak. You know, Yaroslav Askarov has played really well. They have a ton of, you know, young players that are coming through. And really, I think that the Milwaukee to Nashville pipeline has been pretty tried and true over the years in developing players and sending them on. And we're seeing it with Luke Evangelista this year now. But, you know, as far as Svechkov goes, I mean, the great thing is he's still young. He's just turned 20, or he'll be 21 in April. And he's still got plenty of time ahead of him. You know, he played in the KHL last season, now in the AHL. You know, so I think he's trending in the right direction to potentially challenge for a roster spot as soon as next season, depending on, you know, where Nashville is, what happens at the trade deadline, different things like that. He also, you know, certainly as a guy that if you're a team that's interested in doing deals with Nashville, I don't think that's a player you'd be able to get off their hands. But, you know, you think about the different ways that Nashville might make moves at the deadline. It'll be interesting to see how much these young players factor in. That said, you know, I think as far as what he'll be as an NHL player, I think you're looking at a middle six player. I think, you know, he could potentially be a center, could be a wing. It's kind of up for debate at this point. He's got decent enough size. He plays with strength. He plays with some power. He plays with aggressiveness. I've always liked his game, really have always liked his game, you know, from in-person viewings of him before everything went away and we don't see Russia anymore. I think that Fedor Svechkov has a chance to be a very effective NHL player. And I'm really excited to see kind of where he goes next as a player, because he has taken a bigger step than I thought he would in this first year, especially offensively. And so to see that he's producing, that he's impactful at this level and has been pretty consistent at this level as well, those are very exciting things for me. I think really his offensive production has only picked up in recent weeks. And so we're starting to see him really take off in that regard. So that is a player that I think if you're a Nashville Predators fan, count him among the guys that you're going to be counting on soon in the NHL. All right, Brian has a question for us, and this one is about Axel Sandin-Pelikka, who we mentioned earlier in the show. Axel Sandin-Pelikka has played well. How soon do you feel he will be in Grand Rapids with the Griffins and Detroit? That is an interesting question, because I think that For the Red Wings, they have always been the over-marinate as a prospect. Let them cook a little bit in wherever they are. And I'll be interested to see exactly how they feel about Axel Sandin-Pelikka in this regard, because he's playing big minutes. Could he next year play even more minutes? That's the thing. If he's playing more minutes in the SHL next year, if he's playing a significant role for that team next year, and he's also got more time, he's got eligibility to play in the World Juniors, that to me is probably the best path forward. He's under, you know, he's not signed yet by the Red Wings. So they don't necessarily control his fate yet. So that's the other factor in this whole thing as well, is that he is, you know, kind of controls his own fate. He is under contract for another season in the SHL. Those can be, you know, handled if need be. But I think that there's no reason to rush this process. Yes, he's played better. His production has cooled a bit in recent weeks. He hasn't had a point since he played in the World Juniors. So that is something that you monitor. And, you know, you think about the pandemic obviously affected this, but the Red Wings were not afraid to send Moritz Seider to Sweden, even after he had been in the AHL. I just don't think, as you see with Simon Edvinson now, you know, I think that there is still more. He's kind of been in a bit of a, he's certainly not languishing by any means. He's played well. It's just, you know, if you bring him, how long would you keep him in Grand Rapids? How beneficial is that to him versus potentially playing a top four role in Sweden next year? That's the question that I have. So I would lean towards another year in Sweden, playing for the World Juniors, developing, and, you know, coming along. That's my personal take on it, but it's certainly not, a hard and fast one. But I think patience is always better, especially with younger defensemen that may be a little bit undersized. Give them opportunities to flourish where they are. All right, our next question comes from Blake Wheeler, and I don't think this is the New York Ranger Blake Wheeler. This question is about, where do you see Callum Ritchie next year? Do you think he gets 9 games with the Avs? So Callum Ritchie, currently in the OHL, the Oshawa Generals, a very intriguing player, did not make Canada's under 20 team this year. Always kind of an indicator of a player's readiness. That was obviously disappointing for him to not make that team. And I don't necessarily disagree with it. I think, you know, with him at his age, you know, he is just turned 19 in January. That is a player where you can potentially give him that long look. He is certainly outpacing his production from last year. I think that he's played really well in the limited opportunities I've had to see him play, you know, especially the guys that are in junior that are already drafted. I'm not spending as much time watching them as I am watching the other prospects, but obviously you catch glimpses of a player like Callum Ritchie, especially considering that he's got Beckett Senecky on his team, and that's a player I'm watching for the draft. Callum Ritchie, to me, you know, could he get that 9-game stint? I think he's going to be given every opportunity to challenge in camp. I just think that the Avalanche are really not in a position where they need a 20-year-old on their lineup to, you know, make the jump quickly. So I think they're going to exercise patience with Callum Ritchie as well. You can never over-marinate a guy. I think that getting even some AHL time is going to be beneficial to him as he moves forward. But I really think that, you know, if I'm an Avalanche fan, I'm pretty excited about the development that he's had and the steps that he's made as a player here. You know, not making the World Junior team this year is not really a huge indication of where he is going to be as a player. It just meant that they were going older and there wasn't a spot for him on the team. So keep an eye on that. I think he's a real intriguing player. Could certainly get the 9-game stint. I don't think he's going to be in the NHL next year, though. That's my take on him. All right, another question from a Blackhawks fan, and actually Maxwell is getting 2 today, but I wanted to answer this one because I think that this is an important topic. I like talking about it when it comes to prospects all the time, but Maxwell asks, what does Lucas Reichel need to focus on at the AHL level that he hasn't already shown he has in his game? So when a player like Lucas Reichel, who spent most of the season in the NHL level, and the team has basically expected him to take a certain step this year, and then they haven't taken that step, is, you know, they're using the right method of what to do next. So sending him back to the AHL is certainly prudent at this time. 10 points in 50 games. This is a player who, when he's at his best, is producing offensively. He had 51 points in 55 games with Rockford last season, 15 points in 23 games with the Blackhawks. So he was better last season with the Blackhawks in terms of points per game and everything else. What does he need to show? there's got to be a level of consistency. The game is not easy for him right now. The other thing, the Blackhawks are putrid. I mean, that is a bad hockey club. And it'd be hard for any young player, not at a Connor Bedard level, to make an impact on that roster. It's hard for veteran players to make an impact on that roster right now. I'm not concerned. Like, I think that the Blackhawks have been patient with Lucas Reichel. That I thought we would see the step this year. It didn't come. All right, so now there's a reset. One of the things that I saw Luke Richardson's comments, get back to having fun playing hockey. Get back to not thinking about, you know, your spot in the lineup. He's going to play top line minutes. He's going to get many opportunities. And if he shows at the AHL level, hey, the game is coming easier to me again, things are being more natural. And it might take a few games. It might take him a while. The AHL is a tough league. And he has been playing in a tough position. But I think Lucas Reichel still has time. I still have a lot of faith in him as a player that is going to find his way. Yes, the clock is ticking. Yes, the pressure is on. Yes, we've thought that he was taking that step before. But I am not ready to give up on a player that I think is highly skilled, highly intelligent, and still has a lot of runway. And the Blackhawks may be in a better position down, you know, later on in the season to give him the minutes that he's going to need, to give him the opportunity. And hopefully that's after having regained some confidence in the AHL. I think it's all about confidence. It's all about mentality right now. I do not think there's a lot of physical things. It's just getting back to being comfortable offensively, which he has not looked comfortable all season long. Looks like he's, you know, in his head a little bit. All right. Our final question is looking way into the future, all the way to the 2026 NHL draft, but you can't ignore what's happening with this player. At RandomTask68 asks, thoughts on Gavin McKenna having an incredible WHL season, 28, 53, and 81 in 50 games, early front runner for first overall in 2026? Oh, I think so. So Gavin McKenna is a player that I think has gotten a lot of attention this year for a player that's not draft eligible until 2026. He is really fascinating in a number of ways. And I think the most fascinating way is that his U17 season, as of this moment, is on pace to better Connor Bedard's under-17 season by 1 point. He's not the goal scorer that Connor Bedard is. He is, however, a high-end playmaking player who has skill, who has, you know, a still growing frame, who has offensive intelligence, a great shot, great passing ability, reads the game extremely well. And, you know, he got his first look. He got his first taste of the WHL last season, was over a point per game in 16 games. Impressive. Now 81 points in 50 games. Among U17 players all time in the WHL in points per game, with a minimum of 20 games played, Gavin McKenna is second, ahead of Connor Bedard by 0.01 points per game. You look at the 2026 draft, I'm not usually looking at that. I'm not looking at those players that are in that, so I can't give you a definitive answer, but I can only say that what Gavin McKenna is doing at the WHL level is special. He is outstanding, and he looks older. You know, the way he plays is advanced for his age. He just turned 16 in December, so he's a late 07. So he'll, you know, but I think that he is absolutely on track to be a number one pick. A lot can happen in 2 years, though. Injuries, you know, change in teammates, different things can happen. You know, playing on this Medicine Hat Tigers team where there's a lot of talent on that roster, you know, helps. But what we've seen from Gavin McKenna so far is a player that is looking very, very special. A guy I am excited to watch in the years to come. A guy that I think we're going to see play on the international stage and multiple international events before his draft year. Gavin McKenna is absolutely a player to watch and is doing things that really you just don't see very often. So the fact that his name is right next to Connor Bedard's in that points per game race at his age is insane. because I didn't think we'd see anything like what Connor Bedard was doing in his own U17 year. Not in the modern era, but here we are. And we've now seen it in multiple years. Lots of great questions today. Thanks, everybody that sent them in. Really appreciate it. It helps make the show better, and it gives me something to think about and something to research and get ready for you. So I really appreciate all of that. Also want to send a huge thanks to Josh for producing today's episode. But we're going to wrap things up for this week. We will be back very soon to talk much more. We've got college hockey playoffs. We've got junior hockey playoffs on the horizon. It is that fun time of the year. We'll be talking things like Frozen Four, bracketology, all those different things that come with it. But that is going to do it for this week's episode. My name is Chris Peters. This is Talking Hockey Sense. We'll catch you next time. All righty. All right. Thank you. Yeah, I like that. I thought that rolled pretty nice too with the screen grabs and everything. So yeah, I thought so. Looked good enough for me. So all right. Yeah, I am. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Josh. I appreciate it, man. I hope you get a chance to rest at some point. Oh, wow. Take advantage. Take advantage. Yeah. Yep. Yep. All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Josh. All right. Have a great day. See ya.